Welcome to Ryan Rants and Raves, a podcast series by the Quebec Government Office in New York. Bienvenue à Ryan Rants and Raves, une série de podcasts par le gouvernement du Québec à New York.
Today, I'm pleased to be with Tim Moore, who is the executive VP at Hilden. And Hilden has been around for over 50 years and is an integral part in the retail and fashion industry. Tim, thank you again for being with me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Tim, I mentioned, Hilden has been around. Can you give some background about Hilden for those who don't know what Hilden is?
Yeah, absolutely. Hilden is, was born in 1958, and we've always been in the apparel business. But in the early 80s, we really kind of went into high-end fashion, and we started working with brands like Betsy Johnson and Marc Jacobs, and even worked with Tommy Hilfiger at one point. And we've kind of developed a specialty in working with high-end fashion. And it's grew from the 80s where we had 80 fashion brands. Now we work with over 500 fashion brands. And what's great about that is they all sell to the same type of accounts.
Yeah. So we
not only have a really good understanding of what a fashion brand needs and is looking for, but we also understand what the stores are needs and looking for.
I think that puts you at a great place because it's rare to understand what both sides are actually seeking.
Correct.
The viewpoint, and I think brands often don't understand the viewpoint of a major, say like Saks or say like Neiman Marcus. But quickly, how do factors differ from say a bank? Someone could say I could use the financial services of my bank instead of a factor.
Right. I mean, banks are always looked to as getting a simple line of credit that's at the lowest price, because that's what banks are. They have the lowest price of funds. They have the lowest price for lines of credit. It's simple. You get a line of credit you can utilize for your business. If you can qualify for a line of credit that's large enough to grow the business, then that's usually a company's first go-to. However, banks are conservative. Banks will only lend so much. They generally want assets backing their lines. And there's a lot of inflexibility with banks. So if you're a growing fashion brand, you're usually looking for other sources besides banks to take their business to the next level. At some point, some stage down the road, when the business becomes very stable and very profitable and you have a strong balance sheet, then a lot of companies do actually go back to banks for their lending purposes. And many still stick with the non-banking world for their financing too, because at some point it becomes a very limited difference between factoring and banking.
Well, I imagine that banks have become even more conservative given everything that's happened with COVID. So that makes, I think, factoring much more of an option.
And factoring is known as known for its flexibility. It's known for working with companies that are that have high seasonality, so they have large peaks of needs for funds during certain times of the year, and then it goes down in between seasons, or they need the flexibility because they need to do a combination of production financing and receivable financing. There's just typically more flexibility when you're dealing with a factor because it's actively managed by the factor and you have a relationship with the factor, where I don't really think most companies have a real relationship with a banker that can actually make decisions based on a company's needs until they get to very, very, very large lines of credit, like in the $5 to $10 million range, which is actually called middle market. Where in factoring, you have a lot of tier factors, and you can work with factors from a startup stages to very large stages. And there's a lot of interaction with the factor, a lot of interaction with the people that run the account, and you can discuss your needs on a regular basis. And typically, a factor is willing to step in and help fund where other lending sources like banks are not willing.
And you mentioned how factors are very flexible, and especially in fashion, that's very needed given the seasonality. A lot of times they have to prepare the production X amount of months in advance, and then they need the cash flow at that moment. But, you know, what are some other advantages of being factored?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest advantages is that nobody, well, it's not in all factored, but in factors in the apparel world and factors in apparel world is including accessories, including jewelry, yeah, including footwear, everything, is the ability for the factor to get paid before anybody else and make sure that stores pay. And especially during this COVID time, yeah, when nobody was getting payments, we were still getting payments in. I mean, stores were still making the effort. They were, if they couldn't pay the full invoice, they were partially paying the invoices. It's a really big advantage for anybody in the apparel business to work under a factor, especially working with a factor, well, you say like Hilden that specializes in apparel to make sure they get paid timely. And with that, making sure they get paid timely is also making sure they get paid, period, because the factors, yeah, we take the risk of non-payment. So you really know who to ship, who not to ship on terms. And there's ultimately a backstop where if the store does go out of business, that there's a guarantee and such. And then back to the flexibility of working with a factor, where this market, I don't know how many, I'm sure there's a lot of brands out there that were very profitable in 2019, when 2020, they're probably not going to be very profitable. And factors, generally speaking, and I can speak on Hilden, we're not concerned about profitability, we're concerned about viability and the ability of a business to continue to get sales and grow out of whatever financial situation they're in, and we're willing to help them and support them financially.
And, you know, for a company that's interested in Hilden, you know, what's the minimum, you know, amount of revenues that you're looking for in order for them to use your service?
That's an interesting question, because we've been known to take on startups. We've always been known to take on startups, and startup meaning, you know, a company that's projected to do in their first year in sales at least 250 to 500,000 in sales is what we kind of consider a startup. And that's probably considered a startup in the apparel world.
Yeah.
Is 250 to 500,000 in sales in the first year. It really depends on what stores they're selling to. If they're selling to stores that get approved for credit, then they could even be doing even less. If they have a really good brand, a good background, a good story behind them that's going to really propel their business going forward, maybe not the first year, but the next year, then we look at all those things. So volume is something we do look at, but we definitely look at the story. We look at the brand. We look at the product. We look at the backgrounds of the people. We look at a lot of things besides just the volume.
Which is important. But, you know, and if someone has, for instance, you know, if they get in all doors of Saks, which, you know, might be rare, they're already meeting that minimum. And that is, I think, very important, like if someone's with a department store, for them to be factored, because...
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of brands do go out and they say, okay, well, I'm going to start out slow. I'm only going to take orders from stores that will prepay them for the sales. And that's fine. And that's probably not a bad way to start. But what a brand really wants is they want to get into the best stores that they can sell to. They want to, and those stores hopefully will buy more from them. So the whole idea behind offering terms is, you know, also, I mean, obviously you have to give stores like Saks and Neiman's and Nordstrom's terms if you're going to do business with them. But there's a lot of specialty stores out there, and the specialty stores will want terms also. And a brand needs to know who they can get terms, who they can trust, and who actually pays. And that's one thing that we do, is we tell them, we let the brands know, these are ones that you can trust and give terms to, and other ones that we advise to get prepayment from.
Well, I think that's golden information for them.
In 5 years or 10 years from now, you want to look at your business and know that you built the business around the best quality accounts out there. And the 80-20 rule actually is a good rule, is that 80% of your business should be coming from good quality net term accounts that have good credit and that buy healthy business. And that doesn't mean 80% of your business being in Saks necessarily, but 80% of your business being in good quality accounts, diversified, quality accounts. And the only way you're going to build that is really knowing who to ship on terms and who not.
You say diversification. I think that's very important for brands. I think if a company has all their eggs in one basket right now, it puts them in a very precarious situation, given our time. So I think that's a great point you mentioned. But speaking of retailers, you know, you have a strong relationship with them. You know, what are things that retailers often look for or often see as advantageous that brands can offer that many times they don't think of?
Recently, we ran a Zoom call with all the majors. We had Saks, Neiman's, Nordstrom's, Intermix, Bloomingdale's, and a variety of other large, even specialty chains and large accounts on the Zoom call. And we asked them that exact question you just asked me. And the one thing that came up is that all stores want to buy and be able to commit to orders closer to delivery. Mm-hmm. So if anything, what I think most brands should be working on is working on their production sources. They should have the option to be able to produce close to season. And that not only means working on your production sources, but even working on your product assortment, because some products really cannot be produced close to season where other products can. And, you know, certain sources are available for certain products and other products, they're not. So working on the product assortment and working on your production sources to be able to produce and ship closer and in season will be key going through this whole, this COVID uncertainty.
Which makes sense because it's hard to predict. So, you know, if they could have a strong turnaround, you know, for the retailer, it reduces their risk. So they buy more close on the trend or what's going on.
That's right.
What are some mistakes that you often see with, you know, smaller brands? Because you work with several brands.
There's a couple things. And we already touched on one of them, diversity. I would probably say I've been doing this for I've been doing it for 25 years with Hilden for almost 24 years. And I have run into and met with thousands and thousands of brands. And the one that keeps on coming up is diversity and inventory. If I ever meet with a brand that used to be in business and then no longer in business and then going back into business, they always tell me the same thing. I'm not going to inventory. I'm only going to produce based on my orders and I'm going to diversify my customer base. So those two things are huge. I mean, there's more obvious ones like overhead and keeping the overhead low, but I think that's a little bit more common knowledge. Yep. Even maybe it's not in all cases, but the inventory part and the diversification are massive. And anybody that had been in business and went out of business and going back into business, same thing every time. Not going to produce based on spec. And I'm not going to have all my eggs in one basket.
I can only imagine someone, you know, in the height of COVID who kept tons amounts of inventory and how hard it must be for them now to find a way to move that inventory.
Yeah, there's no avenues. I mean, everybody was trying to be very creative. They were doing glorified sample sales, pop-up shops, something to move the inventory, and not easy.
Yeah, and if a brand, you know, just had the habit of keeping a lot of inventory beforehand, you know, they probably have a double amount of what they were expecting. So, you know, to change gears a bit, so a lot of your job, you know, pre-COVID had been, you know, attending the trade shows, meeting brands in person. You know, how have you adapted with COVID to, you know, network and, you know, interact with new clients and also maintain relationships with current clients?
Well, I mean, there's a positive, like it's almost like a little bit of a double-edged sword, is a little bit of a positive and a negative with the COVID. The positive part about networking, keeping in touch with with our accounts, our clients, and, you know, prospective clients, basically is that they're all available. It's easy to find. I mean, nobody's traveling to Europe for trade shows and markets. Nobody's traveling east to west, to Atlanta, Dallas, Chicago, you know, throughout the selling season. So trying to get people and talk to them and work with them is super easy right now because everybody's in the same boat. They're not traveling. So that's the positive. The negative is that, you know, there's a lot of issues, a lot of concerns, there's a lot of questions, there's a lot of uncertainty. So, you know, when there's a lot of uncertainty, you have a lot of brands out there that are have a very difficult time going forward.
So on a lighter note, you know, as Quebec sponsors the podcast, can you mention anything about Quebec? You know, I know you work with a great Quebec company, Macage, but, you know, even personally, you know, if you like Quebec or Montreal, you know, with your experience in Canada, with your daughters play hockey, is there anything you can mention?
I mean, I visited Quebec a few times when I was younger, had such a great time in Quebec. Quebec was just, I think, one of the most fascinating cities. The architecture, it's just incredible. And as far as the, you know, what just in Canada in general, I mean, I certainly have a real love for Canada, given I do have three daughters that play ice hockey, and we pretty much live in a variety of cities on a when pre-COVID basis, when we used to travel to tournaments and camps. So we definitely love it there. You know, Montreal, been to Montreal many times, Vancouver area and such. And I just, you know, I really love Canada. It's amazing. It's so clean. It's just different. And as far as the brands we work with, I think there's a lot of good fashion that comes out of Canada, and there's a lot of good growing brands that seem to last for a long time and stay in business for a long time, and that come out of Quebec and the surrounding areas and such. And Macage is one of the better names that we work with in Canada, but we also have many brands we work with in Canada that maybe are a little less known than that brand.
Exactly. And it's great to see that you have that relationship with them. You know, to close, you know, do you have any advice in general for brands seeking financing? You know, I know you also work with D2C brands as well. So do you have any general advice for all these brands?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they should really be exploring their options. I think that rates are something of consideration, but I think the flexibility of a lender is way more important. But there's a crossover there. You know, certainly you don't want to be spending so much money on your interest. So you have to watch out. There's a lot of lenders out there called merchant cash advance lenders, or MCAs, that the interest or the rates can be astronomical. So you do have to watch, you know, what you're paying. But the same token, if it's close enough between a traditional banking and, say, a factor where you can get reasonable difference in rates wise, and you have that flexibility, by all means, go with the flexibility. Because one thing this whole COVID thing has taught us is that being with a flexible lender is massive when it comes to trying to get yourself out of these stressful situations.
And there's something I do also want to mention, but, you know, on your website, there's information, you know, about some conversations you've had. You know, one was with the trade show organizer Liberty, and then you had another conversation, you know, with Informa and some stores. I think that is a great resource for all listeners, because it shares, you know, some other, you know, knowledge and pointers that they can you know, utilize in their own business practices.
Yeah, I especially like the one with the stores and the showrooms. And it just gave the perspective, a marketing perspective, from both sides, the stores and the showrooms, what they were both looking for, what they're both likes and dislikes about virtual marketing. I thought it was excellent. I mean, I learned a lot during it. So, I mean, it's some area where I don't really know, and to be able to interview these great resources, it was a great thing.
No, I completely agree. When I, especially for a brand, you know, who has, let's say a brand is not accustomed to doing business outside the trade show, you know, they're accustomed to the buyer coming and seeing the, you know, the quality. And I think it's a way for them to see hear from the horse's mouth how they could pivot in order to work with, you know, some great specialty stores, but also and to see how some showrooms are adapting to continue business.
That's right.
Well, on that, Tim, thank you again for your time. It was a pleasure chatting with you. And I'm sure we'll be chatting shortly again.
Wonderful. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate you having me.
Merci d'avoir écouté Ryan's Rants and Raves. Suivez-nous sur Instagram at Ryan's Rants and Raves. Thank you for listening to Ryan's Rants and Raves. Follow us on Instagram at Ryan's Rants and Raves. À très bientôt.